So, the subject of the shiur today is the principle of the words of the master and the words of the disciple, whom should we listen to? The master is Hashem, the teacher is Torah, the disciple is the human being. And if human beings say we should go in a certain direction, and Hashem says differently, we have to listen to Hashem. And therefore, we learned in Kiddushin that what happens if a person or a Mr. A says to Mr. B, go and kill Mr. C, who's innocent, we say that Mr. A is not considered guilty according to the accepted opinion, which does not follow Shammah. Shammah says he is guilty. It's a special case in which we learn this. But the conclusion is of the Gemara or of the Rambam, that he is Chai B'din HaShamayim. The one who sends another person on mission to kill or appear also for other sins is still liable according to heavenly punishment. One of the reasons is given why he's not liable for human punishment because the person who sends somebody else to do something criminal and you expect the other person not to be a criminal, as we're calling being abused, then he says you shouldn't listen to me, you should listen to Hashem. If he knew that what he's doing was a crime, the police. And therefore, the one who appoints an agent to perform a crime on his behalf is not to be judged by human courts, but he will be judged by Hashem. Now this principle, Divrei HaRav, Divrei HaTam, Jeremi Shomen, where is it first mentioned in Chumash Rashi? Can anybody tell me? That's from the previous Shurim.
The snake, probably.
Yes.
To be going with.
In other words, the snake was a creature of Hashem. And Adam and Eve were creatures of Hashem. And Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava were given the commandment, maybe Chava indirectly, Adam Arishon directly, they should not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And therefore when the Nochos, the serpent, primeval serpent, creature of Hashem, when he suggests to Chava that he should eat, that she won't die, she shouldn't have listened to him. And therefore the snake shouldn't be punished. Now if you look carefully in the third chapter of the Chumash, there are many questions you can ask. First of all, let's try to understand how we can apply a principle which applies to Dine Torah, whether it's the Noahide code or whether it's the code given to Am Yisrael. How can we apply this to those first chapters of the Chumash which deal with esoteric matters and which are very deep, and according to most of the commentators in Midrashim shouldn't just be taken literally? So how do we apply what happened in Gan Eden to what happens to us? That's my first question. How can you, as it were, apply this print, Divrei HaTalmid, Divrei HaShomer, which is Svarah, yeah, good, it's a good svara, it's a logical, moral, logical principle. But can we really fathom the deep secrets of Gan Eden? It's a different planet than the one we live on. It's a spiritual planet. Well, what's the answer?
I don't know if it's the answer, but I think maybe you can make an analogy to the fruit of knowledge that was, when they ate it, after that, they knew. So you can kind of make an analogy like the Torah is sort of like the fruit of knowledge. That after we received the Torah, you need answers, you have questions. It's like now it's like you sort of have a path of which way to go, left or right, and the Torah can tell you.
Well, yes, very good. But we can go much further. Yes?
I was going to say was, as Adam and Eve are our ancestors, in the same way that what happens to Israel affects the entire Jewish nation, the same way what happens to them affects all of humanity.
Very good. Well, where is this mentioned in the Chumash? I've mentioned this to some of you in any case, quite frequently. It's shown also in the Sheva Brachot, which are recited under the chuppah, and then in the 7 days when there's a meal, the chatan and kala. This can be proven from there. From where? From those brachot. We say to the chatan and kala that we hope that they will be able to have such joy, tzameach tzameach reim ha'uvim. Go and bring joy, we say, to the beloved couple, or the loving couple, just like you brought joy to your creatures in Gan Eden. So we see Chatan and Kala are compared to those who are entering into Gan Eden. And what's the source for this? This is so explicit source of the Chumash. The Chumash says, describes the creation of Adam and Chava. And then it says, Al Ken Yazov Ish et Aviv Vetibo Vedavak Vishto Vayul Vasar Echad. From here we learn that a person has to forsake his father and mother. But Adam and Chav didn't have a father and mother. So a person has to forsake his father and mother, that means today, and cling to his wife. And for there we learn Halacha, Davak Vishto Velo Ve'esh L'Chavirov. This is a commandment to all mankind. Once you get married, you should cling to your wife and not commit adultery. So we see the verse itself teaches us that you're not allowed to commit adultery, all human beings. It's learned from Adam and Chava. More than that, it teaches us if you want to have a good marriage, you've got to break the apron strings that cuts children, that ties children to their parents too much. They find it difficult to get married, or they find it difficult in marriage, because they're not able to start becoming independent enough to say, I've learned a lot from my parents, received from them, but now comes a time when I have to establish both, to some extent, the chatan and the kala, our future, and to start anew. In fact, we are half a soul each, and we've got to make a complete neshama together. That's described in the Talmud. We learn out from Gan Eden exactly for marriage today. So therefore, this gives us an opening also to understand the nochash. So, before we go into this more deeply, I want to ask a contradiction, which is raised by all the authorities, between the Gemara and Kiddushin and the Chumash, or the Gemara and Sanhedrin, the Chumash Rashi. Because Rashi says that if you look in the text, when Hashem was asking, he asked the serpent, why did you do this evil? He didn't even ask, you see, but he did. He punished the serpent. He punished Adam, he punished Chava. So, when he spoke to Adam, he asked Adam, why did you go against my commandment? So what did Adam answer?
Blamed Chava.
Did the name of the game is to blame. Yeah? So what did he do? He blamed his wife. You, and he said to Hashem, you're to blame, you gave me my wife. So then, alright, so then Hashem asked the wife, asked Chava, why did you do it? So who did she blame?
Blame the snake.
Blame
the serpent.
The serpent. And what about the serpent? Did he ask the serpent any questions?
Yeah.
No, he didn't even let the serpent speak. He said to the serpent, because you did this, therefore you're going to lose your power of speech. You're never able to speak. Yeah. And you'll go on your belly. He cursed the nochash. But he didn't give the chance of the nochash to speak.
Why not?
Because what could the nochash could have spoken strongly? What could the nochash have said?
Why did they listen to me?
You created me this way.
You told them yourself. Why are they supposed to?
No, what the nochash?
You tempted me.
Rashi says, and the Gemara Sanhedrin says, the Gemara Sanhedrin says, what the Gemara Sanhedrin say? The nochash could have had a stronger claim. What do you mean? Why do you blame me? Blame Adam and Chava. You didn't give me any commandment, really. Why do you blame me? You created me. What could the Nochos have said? They should have listened to you. So what did we learn from here, the Gemara and Sanhedrin? And also, this again, learning from Gan Eden to what happens in the courts of Torah, that there's a din which applies specifically by din and nefashot. Let's say a person accused of murder and he's not in a very good state and he can't really put forward his claims properly, then the judges have to help him and give him suggestions what he could claim. Let him claim that he was provoked. Why did he kill the other person? The other person provoked him. He described it. So often it happens. People are blamed and the judges have to do everything to help the person who's accused to find a claim of his innocence. And if he can't speak himself properly, was probably he's arrested, in shock and so on. So the judges have to help him. So the Gemara says it's on Hedin. Yeah, that applies to every type of capital punishment. In cases of monetary matters, we don't bother so much, because some money can always be given back. But if there's a question of a person accused of something which is liable to the death sentence, we help him to make claims for his innocence. And the judges have to work on it. Not only the lawyers, the judges themselves should do it. Find his chut and help him to save. But there's an exception. What's the exception? Any of you looked at the Gemara? What's the exception?
Monetary matters.
Yeah, that's the exception for the judges to make a claim, but it's not. But in a capital case, there's also an exception. What is it?
Warnings?
Pardon?
Warnings?
No. It's learned not from the Nochash. Gemara said, we learn from the Nochash. And this exception is, Ein Tohanim Lemesit. What did the Nochash do? Nochash enticed Chava. Didn't just say he's an agent, enticed Chava. And similarly also, there's a din in the Torah, if there is a person who entices other Jews to worship idols, and he uses, let's say even today, a Jew who goes and entices, if they're witnesses for it, a fellow Jew to go and bring an offering to Buddha, yeah, let's say, or to some African idol, or some would even say to go and do a religious mass or something of that nature and worship the statue of the founder of Christianity and bow down to him. It bring proof that the person enticing Jews all to do it. Well, there was there, we don't help him to make claims. God says he can also claim. What could he claim? What could he claim?
That they should have listened not
yeah,
to
me. Yeah, they should have listened to me. If they, that were, I've started believing in this and that idol. Therefore, I worship the idol. And I've tried to get others to do it. But the others, the Jews, and they believe in Hashem. So why bring a claim against me? So from here we learn out from the Nachash, Hashem also didn't make any claim, didn't allow like judges are supposed to make in the case of capital punishment to the Nachash. And Rashi says, because the Nabokud and the Nachash are claimed. Why should Adam and Eve listen to me? Why should human beings listen to me? I'm an idolater. I tried to entice the Jews to worship idols, but you, Hashem, can't blame me for it. Because after all, if they believe you're the master of everything, they should listen to you, not to me. So that's the Gemara. So everyone asks, what kasha, now I want you to see, what basic question is there? Is a basic contradiction between the Gemara in Kiddushin and this Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Chumash Rashi? Yes?
In the previous Gemara, if you use somebody as an agent for a capital crime, you're not to be judged in a human court, right?
That's right.
But so, here he's being judged in a human court.
Why human court? You haven't got... Where was the human court?
He's being judged for idol worship, for enticing...
No, I'm talking the case of Sanhedrin. Oh. Not the case of the court, the source, the Nochash. There's a contradiction between the case of the Nochash and the case in our Gemara and Kiddushin. What's the difference?
What was the snake punished?
Huh?
Why was he punished? Shouldn't have been punished.
What was the who brought?
Oh, Hashem didn't.
What punishment was it? Was it Dine Adam or Dine Shamayim?
Dine Adam.
Yeah, but where was the court?
The judge is trying to help.
Where was the court?
The judge is trying to help the accused.
Who was the judge following the way of the Torah? Who gave the punishment? Who was it?
Hashem
gave the punishment. That's called Dine Shamayim. The punishment to Adam and Chava and were Dine Shamayim. So that with the din is that Eishel Dvaravim, because we say Divdi Matamit Shomet, therefore the Mishaleach is not Chayiv. It means not Chayiv to human court. But in the case of Adam and Chava, it was a divine court. And divine court is Chayiv. Mm-hmm. All agreed. In other words, the case where we have, which exists today also so frequently, there was a question now, you know, the Court of Hague and some of these courts. So, and there are plenty of people who involved in actual killings, and other people who gave the orders to kill, and made even the enticement to kill. So, the dinner, but dinner shamayim the ol chayim according to the modern kiddushin. So therefore, you can't make the claim. If it's a question, make the claim against Hashem. And by the Nochash, would it be a claim against Hashem? So how can the Lord prove in Sanhedrin the whole matter of Eitan and the Mesis? Well, if you followed so far, so you can give a few, can any of you give an answer? Basic contradiction between the two Talmudical passages.
You got someone who has someone to burn someone down someone's house?
Mm-hmm.
Someone who sends someone to burn down someone's house? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So the honor Vilna says the whole din of being chayv b'din shamayim in the conclusion of the Gemara is in the case of murder, case of killing, but not apply in other instances. And here it wasn't a question of killing. It wasn't a question of murder. A question of enticement to transgress the prohibition of Hashem not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's one answer. Another answer is, when do we say that there is a din, when you can say, divra divra tamid, divra mishonim,
and then there is a punishment of Din HaShamayim. That is, in the case where a person makes someone as an agent to fulfill something for himself. But in the case of the Nachash itself didn't really have benefit. He just said, the Nachash just said to Eve, then went over to Chava, for your own sake, go and eat and enjoy. In any case, let's go more deeply into the whole question, which applies to all of us in some extent, if we're now going to apply, as we see from these discussions in the Gemara, which have all these halachic ramifications. We're going to try and reconcile the different sources, but let's go into it a bit more thoroughly. Because, as children, okay, we all know the story of Adam and Eve, but now we're all in an early or later part of adolescence or maturity, so let's try to understand this more deeply. My first question is, on this whole passage, since we're going to apply Gan Eden to us today, so we were expressed also marriage has something to do with it. So, the first question is, the man was created, B'tzelem Elokim. That's mentioned in the first chapter, and then afterwards goes on the other chapters of the Chumash, first chapter of the Chumash. And that's one of the basic teachings. What is the Tzelem Elokim? How would you define it? As applied today.
Our attributes.
Huh?
Our attributes.
So according to nearly all the deeper commentators, Ramban, Sofonov, all of them, the Tzelem Elokim is the soul of man. The level of conscience, the deep conscience, which is the voice of Hashem within each human breast. So, the big question, which is put most clearly in the words of the Rambam, that a great Torah sage asked him this, what was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Isn't the knowledge of good and evil the conscience? Every human being knows there's difference in good and bad. There may be different interpretations how we will define the good and the bad. But every human being has a certain area of his awareness called the conscience. Even though some try to destroy it, suppress it, but it's there underneath. And if a person has gone against his own conscience, he feels guilt. The guilt feeling. Guilt feeling is also, he's ashamed of it inside. Deep inside he's ashamed of it. However, his conscious mind deals with it is another question. Those who try to suppress it completely, they become addicts to evil. If they've got no, even amongst thieves, there's honesty amongst thieves, and there's a certain level. So if Adam and Eve were given this Tzelem Elokim, what did the knowledge of good and evil, what does it represent? If beforehand they had no knowledge between good and evil, otherwise they were totally good, and there were robots to do good and couldn't do any evil, then how could they be punished for going against the will of God? How would they be able to do anything against the will of God? They're robots, like the animals. The animal world, the vegetable world, the mineral world, follows cause and effect, predetermined, naturally. They can't change their nature. You can't blame the lion for tearing up its prey, and you can't give great virtue to the herbivorous animals for not going seeking other animals to swallow. What a virtue for them. So therefore also, if you look at according to scientific concepts today also, you can't blame anybody for being evil. Because there is those who regard human beings as being just a higher form of animal with intelligence. So then how can they be punished for eating the tree of knowledge? How can they give the commandments? You can't give the commandments. So what happened when they ate the knowledge of good and evil? So I want to make it a bit short. So the Rambam says as follows. He makes a distinction. He says, before they ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they knew the difference between truth and falsehood. But once, yod ei tov vara, they experienced good and evil, that was what they were not supposed to do. And they experienced good and evil, and as a result, they fell to a lower level. And they had to be driven out from Gan Eden. Which brings us to the present day level of the human being. Now, can anybody explain what does it mean, truth and falsehood? Does it mean truth and falsehood? They were able to have the 1 and 1 equals to 2. Yeah? Or they could prove or disprove the relativity theory. What does it mean, truth? What does Rambam mean when he says truth and falsehood? So, can anybody explain it? So I'll explain it by the following. Following here the Zohar, and the Vilna Gaon, and the Ramban, and the B'chayim. Say like this. I think the Rambam puts it most clearly, and the Zohar puts it in the following way. What is the Nochosh, first of all? How do you identify the Nochosh today?
Yaitza.
Nachash, it says the Midrash, who are Yetzara? Who are Malach HaMavet? Who are Satan? The Nochos represents evil, the power of evil, in different ways. There's evil in man, the evil powers outside man. When Adam and Chava were in the Garden of Eden, the Nochos was really outside the garden. Or at least it was outside, it was near the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then it brought some of its poison into Chava. So this is how it's described. So it says the Nachash was Bachutz, and as a result of the enticement of the Nochosh, which enticed Chava to go and taste evil, and then she enticed, that means, what does it mean evil? To entice to eat. Self-centered enjoyment. She enticed Adam. And this is the purpose of the Nachash. Now, the easy way for us to understand it by what it says in the Chumash concerning prohibitions. Also, the first verse of the Lord talks about, you must not eat from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then we have through most of the Chumash, when we're given prohibitions, it says, don't do Ibnasirat Divrot, don't murder, don't give adultery, don't give false evidence, don't covet. But it says in Sefer Devarim, it gives another level. Sefer Devarim is under the aegis of the love of Hashem. So it says, for example, there's a mitzvah, if you see a stray animal, you've got to give it. Look after it, give back to its owner. Or if you see any lost object, try and get it back to Hashavat Avidah. Lo tuchal litalem, it doesn't say lo titalem. You shouldn't hide yourself from your duty. You shouldn't be able to hide yourself from your duty. What does it mean you shouldn't be able to? That means you should have, having gone through all the mitzvahs of the Chumash, you should be able to reach a level when if you see a stray animal, and even more so, a stray person, and you don't help him in different ways, you shouldn't be able to hide yourself from your duty to help him. It should be something which you feel you have to do. In other words, you've got to raise yourself from the level of when you've got freedom of choice to where you don't have freedom of choice. So I'll give you an example of how this applies today. We know there are people who, from youth upwards, they are told that it's unfortunately, that it's a great duty to David, the duty to Hashem, Chas v'Shalom, should be such a duty, to go and kill others who are innocent, to kill themselves, to kill others, and they are brain contaminated, and most of them, they are robots in the hands of evil people. So, they can kill others. They could do cruel acts on others. Those of us sitting here, are we able to do such a thing?
No.
Have we got any choice? We're unable. We've been raised differently in such a way, or in generations, for us to commit such terrible cruelties as exist in other societies is impossible. None of us have been brought up by families and societies based upon gangsterism, upon doing evil. Same applies to rape, the same by other, some is stealing, open stealing. You know, I don't want to be, you know, sometimes we can disturb someone's sleep. Okay, that's not to, so take an extra portion. But open stealing, to go and steal other people's what? We've been inhibited against it. We couldn't do that. Certainly, all of us inhibited against lunatic acts of idolatry, which are done in other societies, and they think this is a great, great virtue. So in other words, we have been inhibited. So there are certain areas in life where we can't do wrong. There are other areas where each one has his weak points, and we've got a battle. It's only where there's a battling point you've got real freedom. But in others, we don't have freedom. Some of us, you know, we don't have much of a choice anymore of waking up in the morning, because we've got so used to waking up at a certain hour that even if there's no alarm, we wake up automatically. So we don't have, it's no longer an act of true freedom. So therefore, this is the situation with us today as well. The Yetzer Ra works in this fashion. Adam and Chava, before they sinned, they were not able to sin, because they were so much in feeling in complete love with their own environment and with one another and with Hashem, who spoke with them openly. They were on such a high level, they could not do evil, not able to do so. They knew the truth and falsehood. They knew that, like today, I'll give an example. When I gave a talk in university, the time when they asked me to speak about drug addiction, so many drug addicts around. When I spoke of all the evils it produces, they asked me, why don't you take drugs and try it out and then talk? I said, I just had to see the drug addicts, young people who look old and wrinkled and whose arm is filled with syringe remnants and goes around with a tin swapping the cards. I want to try it out. It's so grotesque. It's so ugly. But what happens? A person's enticed by someone. Try it out. Come to a trance party and see. Have a high. Go on to a
rave, boy.
Go on a trip.
Rave. It's a free sample. It's free.
That's right.
Oh,
once you try it, that's dangerous. You try it out, then you get hooked on it. Yeah? And then you get addicted. And never the addicts are in instances here in our area a few years ago, there was a boy from Yeshiva, and he took drugs and took them more and more. He became a terrible drug addict, and as he died, he was going to die from it. And before he died, he told all his friends, please, let's make a society against drugs. Just take an example of what's happened to me. A very sad case, terrible case. So people kill themselves. They ruin their brains, they ruin their life, they ruin their family. We need to experiment. Once you experiment, that's it. So Adam and Chava, they were given a commandment. Don't experiment. You're on the highest level in Gan Eden. Don't experiment with these things. And this is the dream of the future world. The human being will reach the level when you stop experimenting with things that destroy yourself. So I want to bring you here a comment which is so deep and which fits in so well with understanding the whole subject. Because we see it has something to do with nakedness. Because before the sin, they had open body. So the commentator already said, the Ramban says, for them, yes, they're engaged in sexual life. But it's not different to putting on tefillin, to putting on for doing another mitzvah, yeah, or eating the fruits, all the permitted fruits. So let's see. I'm going to give you now one of the great, very great Gaonim, the Kli Chemda. He says like this. Rashi says, when they felt that they were naked after the sin. What do you mean they saw they were naked? They didn't know they were naked beforehand. They were naked beforehand as well. And there's also a Midrashic interpretation, what happened to them. Because before they sinned, their whole body was covered with transparent nail material. And their soul shone through. The light which exists inside it shone outward. Like today as well, you know, today with instruments, they do through ultraviolet radiation. One is able to find out what is the halo that surrounds the human body. The human body exerts radioactive waves, which you can't see today with the naked eye, but you can see it on a screen.
You mean the aura?
The aura. And before the sin, they were such a high level, it shone through. And as you know, for example, they made experiments in a laboratory which deals with this. By that university, people put on tefillin. And they found when people, even people don't believe in tefillin, when they put on tefillin, they had a higher level of the aura that surrounded them, and a higher level of color than when they did not put on tefillin. That it registers the higher levels of brain activity. So this is the halo, the aura that surrounds all of us. So it shone through transparently. And then, that's why it says, originally they had kotnot or. They were surrounded by coverings of light. Light giving, which were the nails. That's why, you know, I show the nails of Havdol. It's all to do with it. But listen to this interpretation of Lichemda. What do you mean their eyes were open? So Rashi says, what do you mean if blind people know if they're naked or not? For that you need to have the eyes open before they were blind to it. So therefore, what does it mean? Vayedu, now they knew that they were naked. Because they said, mitzvah achat hayta biyadam, Rashi says, one mitzvah was in their hands, and they were denuded from this one mitzvah. Question is, what is this one mitzvah? So many people say, well, it's the mitzvah not to eat from the tree of Nara Sukundi, but that's not the mitzvah. It's a prohibition. There's no mitzvah in that. Some say it means all the Noachide code. Okay, that's the drash. But let's go according to the pshat. So he said, no, they weren't given a mitzvah. Because Adam and Chava explicitly were given a mitzvah, which later on was given to Bnei Noach, and from Bnei Noach was transferred to the people of Israel. The mitzvah is pru or hu. It says in the first chapter of the Chumash, pru or hu was the mitzvah given to the human race. Because when it's the animals, it says he blessed them with pru or hu. But by Adam, you look carefully, the Chumash, vayomer alehem pru or hu. It was an explicit command of Hashem to Adam and Chava to establish families. Which, what's pru or hu? To have marital relationships. And to use it to produce a family. Like also Rashi says, you look basar echad, alidei avlad. They become one complete flesh in producing a child, the baby. So the whole creative power of the human being to reproduce, that was one mitzvah they were given, the highest mitzvah. Adam and Chava should know they're part of the plan of Hashem to fill the world, miliyah ta'aret, chivshua. In other words, your duty, it says there, is to fill the whole earth. The globe is here to become a unified globe, starting with Adam and Chava, who do it for the purpose of being productive and not destructive. And their essence, this is where everything lies. Have we been created for production or for destruction? So, the commandment said, don't go and eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and think you want to find out what it's like to have a conflict within yourself. Conflict, productivity, which is the Yetzer Tov, and destructivity, which is the Nochash. The Yetzer Ra, the Satan, the obstacle. Now the Satan also means an obstacle because life after Gan Eden is an obstacle race. It's an adventure. Are we able to overcome? Once we've got, mankind has experienced a break in the enormous peace and tranquility, which is based upon removal of everything destructive, then life becomes obstacle race. Therefore, it's a big adventure. It's not easy. And the greater you are, the greater will be the obstacles you'll be given. You know, like that also, I know in America, different levels of different training that you get. You know, there's one that gave the biggest obstacle race, if you get over all that, and you get a very high level. But truth is, that's life. Every person must know the stronger he is, the more obstacle they put in his way. The adventure of life is to overcome the obstacles. So, but listen to what the Kli Chemda says here. Rashi, which mitzvah is Rashi referring to? He said that no other mitzvah they were given explicitly except Pru Avu. So that's the mitzvah they were given. And they had to treat Pru Avu naked. What's the body is holy. And the most holy place is the most constructive place whereby you can reproduce. And Hashem has also made it to be the greatest source of happiness and pleasure. Hashem has given us that. That's why it says Shir Ashirim, which deals with love. It says all emotions of human being are holy, have dedicated holiness, and Shir Ashirim Kodesh Kodashim. Shir Ashirim is the most holy, and it speaks about the great power of love. And even you say today, everybody knows, love is not something which just comes from down, from deep below, it comes from above. It's called the flame of God. It's the highest level. But love easily is transformed into lust. The higher it is, the lower it can become if you don't do it with what Hashem has in mind. You've got to be dedicated to Hashem. But Hashem has given us that love. So this is how he says it. He says, it would appear that although all the mitzvot of Bnei Noach, except one to set up justice in order to judge all cases, others are all negative. And through of all they were commanded originally, that was then transferred to Israel, that eating from the tree of the knowledge is also a negative prohibition, not a mitzvah. Therefore Rashi really is referring to Pru Avu. And that's why before the sin of the golden calf they weren't ashamed. And it was not different to performing any other good deed in the service of Hashem. That it says they had to work in the garden, look after it and so on. That refers to the concept of mitzvah. So you say like this. So the mitzvah Pru Avu, before the sin, they were naked, but they weren't ashamed. And the Rabban says, before the sin, lo hai ben taba klal. They didn't have materialistic desire. But there was a mitzvah like tefillin, like tzitzis. Therefore they had no shame. After they sinned, then they were aware of it, and it became a materialistic, self-centered desire, and therefore they were emptied from this mitzvah. Now it was it came as a desire, and the desire could even go, as I said, if they find a more beautiful woman, then it might lead them astray. And this I think is a deep explanation, and we can understand now what this is. Now the Yetzirah comes to us as the follows. If you go a bit more deeply, this is the concept of Chazal say, when Am Yisrael came to Har Sinai, like one of you mentioned before, the Adam and Eve situation with the Nochash was rectified when the Torah was given. When all Am Yisrael reached the level of prophecy, then also they put right the sin of Adam and Eve. In other words, they reached the level of having the main desire was you've got to follow the commandment of Hashem and not follow the commandment of the human concept. Once we think good and evil can be defined by human beings, all human beings their mind and their judgment become subjective. It's no longer objective. Once we've experienced any form of evil, it can get in the way of making any objective judgment about others and even more so about ourselves. Since a person is now born with a self-centered instinct that he wants to have pleasure for himself and power for himself, so that enters into all his judgments on other people. And therefore, if he follows the Torah entirely, he can gradually work up his way to reach a higher and higher level of minimizing the power of evil inside himself. But we experience evil, and therefore evil is at work. And the greater we are often, the more obstacles we're given in the path towards saintliness. But the truth is, what is the task of man? To try to see to it that when it comes to fulfilling all the mitzvot of the Torah, the highest level is to reach the level that we push the Yetzirah outside our garden and we say we're not having you in our area. They're like, people ask, how can you fulfill the old Tachmod? You shouldn't even covet. You see a more beautiful woman, you shouldn't covet her. How can I help it? It comes by itself. Or if you see what else is rich and you're poor, and he's got everything, and you've got next to nothing, not enough to eat, and you've got constant bills, and you can't pay them. You see somebody else, you shouldn't be jealous of him, but you can't help it. The answer is, if you reach the high level of recognizing, fulfilling Hashem's will, whatever he wants, and accepting whatever lot Hashem has given you, and only look at what you have, be happy with what you've got, and bless Hashem for everything that you have. If you reach that highest level and you're always in touch with Hashem and recognize everything comes from Hashem, then you'll become greater and greater in feeling less and less of your own self. So let's say if you go to nature, if some people start insulting you and saying nasty things about you so you get hurt, if you work on yourself and recognize maybe it's for your own good, because inside, whatever, outside perhaps I don't boast, but inside I think I'm the greatest, I'm the best one, I'm the best teacher, I'm the best rabbi, I'm the best Talmud, yeah, and I'm the most honest person, that's what I think myself. But Hashem is testing us, and therefore he's testing us throughout life, and he says, try and get to the level that you can overcome your conceitedness inside and recognize that your ani is an ayin, you know, that you yourself are fava efa, and try and reach the highest level. And that's our task. And that Matan Torah, if they wouldn't have sinned at the golden calf, the Am Yisrael would have been on that level. And also in Yitz Hashem, when the Mashiach will come, and then the whole world will gain that level. Man will change. Today, man is a destructive animal. More destructive than any of the animals, any other species one has ever seen. They destroy every aspect of life on this planet. They're stockpiling for it on the whole. So we have a great duty to try and teach human beings, let's get back to Gan Eden. It says Eretz Israel, after the Geula, will be like Gan Eden. So we have to prepare Am Yisrael today to Gan Eden. That's what it also says. If a person is and his whole life is involved in learning Torah and fulfilling mitzvahs, doing chesed, then Nachash can't get home with him. Then Atat Shuvin Akev, you can tread him on his head. And the Nachash, what do you mean? You use the Nachash. Say, V'ahavta Hashem Elokeinu b'chol levavcha. You've got to use B'chol Lav Hashem with your Yetzara. The Nachash will become your partner. Nachash gives physical energy in different ways and gives your instincts, your instinctive life, enormous power to come nearer to Hashem. To come nearer to... In fact, I only thought of this in Tefillah a short time ago, that in English we speak about God. That means the definition of God is goodness. So we call Hashem, Toiv Simcho. Ki Toiv Shem, your name is Toiv. Then one of the names of Hashem is that He's the highest essence of goodness. So once all our life becomes goodness, then we can do a great deal to inspire the world. And each one of us have got our part to fulfill that direction. And Yitzhak Hashem, that's the way the Nochash will become our partner. With the materialistic, self-centered instincts. Yes, any questions?
You said the mitzvah Purim was incumbent upon Adam and Eve, and then upon the Noahide nations, and then upon the Israel. So the question is, if you have this mitzvah to do Purim and you find a beautiful woman, maybe you're fulfilling this mitzvah. Even if you have a wife, and maybe that's why before a period of time you could have multiple wives if a man can afford it. Isn't it in conflict, these two things?
Well, it would appear the ideal is to receive from many sources to have one wife. Monogamy is still the ideal. In certain situations in which polygamy was permissible, but today it's not. Today it's not permitted according to Jewish law.
It's a chair.
There's a divine providence over the survival of the body of the people of Israel, as we see constantly. Because although we've got so many enemies and so many destructive powers that wish to exterminate every Jew, it's going on today as well, but Hashem looks after us. Similarly, there's also a special providence over the halachic development according to the categories of the halacha. You find this, it's all mentioned in the Chumash. The Chumash says, if any doubts arise in the future, in the 70th chapter of Devarim, then you have to go to the wisest people, when there's Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin. When there isn't, you go to the greatest saints and scholars, and the two things go together always. They've got to be saints and scholars, who are leaders, spiritual leaders, of the core of the Jewish people, that's still keeping up the oral tradition, and they will make decisions. This isn't applied to the time. So, you see, so today, they made decisions forbidden to go on the Temple Mount, except for security purposes. That's the definite decision. Today there's no Sanhedrin. But today, as the greatest scholars have declared in every generation, we have also data. The consent of the greatest scholars is that it's forbidden for Jews to have more Jews, got to be monogamy. And no other way. And also, it's forbidden, for example, that they'd have capital punishment. Because this is, in the time of Yeshua, things were different. Warfare is also in different times, different situations. Or at the time of Yeshua, there was even a commandment to go and annihilate the corrupt and the wicked Canaanites. But then, shortly after the second Beit HaMikdash, there was no such commandment anymore. So this is in former times, an idolater who would have been given a severe punishment. Today, if somebody is a Jew, that's a human idolater, we would send him to a psychiatric institution. We say, don't give him punishment. No. Give him today the biochemical means to stop unfortunate situations that arise with him. So, yes.
I was going to ask, Rabbi, on the subject, for example, of the drug addiction. Another thing, the fact of the matter is, in many schools, public schools in America, for example, if a boy starts acting too much like a boy instead of a girl, the teachers start saying that they start diagnosing him as having ADHD and demanding that his parents put him on pills, and they start using legal means. They start sending in the police. They ask to be put on these drugs, and they get this boy addicted. They do numerous damage to him. And you know what? I mean, this boy didn't even have a choice. It was like basically stuffed down his throat. I mean,
well, look, there are all types of abuses that exist. According to Jewish teachings, in each instance, you've got to use the right methods. If their boys acting like girls and vice versa in the teenage period, which frequently happens, so there are, according to Jewish teachings, it's certainly the right path to use psychological expertise to try and develop when there's certain double emotions, to try and get people who are biologically boys, to get them in certain ways to develop their emotions in the direction of girls, and vice versa.
The issue was not that.
And I don't know which situation you're dealing with. You say the police demand
because he's acting like a boy. He's not listening to the teacher. He's acting naturally. That's the point. The point. I'm sorry to interrupt, but he's acting naturally. But he's not obeying. He's not acting like they want him to act. That's the problem that they're saying. Schools are not letting boys be boys. They don't want them to be boys. They want them to be girls.
They want them to be robots.
Exactly. That's the point. And they're not acting like robots. And that's upsetting the teachers.
Okay. So there's something wrong with the educational principles.
Yeah.
That's why we Jews have a method, mm-hmm. which is very good, that we have. We don't believe in co-education. We want boys have to learn in one way and girls in a different way. There's got to be separation between from us. The separation between boys and girls, and between especially in adolescence, is of importance. So they should not become lesbians or homos. It helps. That's one of the things that can help, because the separation is a way of developing. Developing each one according to the specific group, Sani Isha. Person's got to feel happy that he's a man who's going to be a man. And women have to be happy, Jasani Kil Sono, that really they're the cream of creation, created after man, and they have even a higher level. The concept of them not having to fulfill all the concrete mitzvah is because they have an inner connection which is more passive with Hashem in their nature, preparing for wifehood and motherhood. Or is that for some reason not possible to prepare them for a life where the central power is Chesed? Well, a man's got to develop Gevura. I'm sure I've given all of you a lot of food for thought. And if you think carefully, there's a close connection with this explanation with the mitzvah of tzitzis. It's very interesting, the concept of a beggar. Because it's clear, a garment is significant.
Thank you.